Okay, when Dr. Adams called me, and basically because the newest section at APHA is the pharmacy public health group. And really, let me move on to the next slide. So I thought I would do is spend a little time talking about the formation of that section, because pharmacy has always had an integral part of working in public health. And it really was thought, this is going back probably 15 years, that it really would be important for pharmacy, and I think for the organization, to have representation within APHA. I think that the discussion about IT and pharmacy is so appropriate and so important, and having a pharmacy group within APHA really provides access, part of the APHA policymaking group that would be good for the profession. The one thing we don't need in pharmacy is isolation, and that is not good. But the group was founded, and it's a year old today. We spent the first year really trying to figure out how APHA works, which is not the easiest thing to do. But right now we have about 150 members, and that we really look at the special interest group to grow to become a section and really be a group that interacts and collaborates with other parts of the American Public Health Association, and that's good. But basically, the interest was interprofessional practice, medication adherence, pharmacoeconomics, policy, prescription drug use and misuse. As you know, the misuse of abuse of prescription drugs is a really nationwide problem. And then the safe use of medication and medication errors. Now, we heard a little bit about medication therapy management, which is a really very hot topic. It may have started in internal discussions within the pharmacy group, but clearly has led to a widespread looking at how, in a very complex area of multiple medications for people, especially with individuals that are elderly, the managing of medication, the appropriate use, the dealing with potential drug interactions, areas that are not always covered in terms of medication and all the other stuff that people can take. Unregulated, really, supplements and vitamins all have an influence in terms of how drugs behave and potentially reduce efficacy or can be a problem in terms of adverse effects. Now, one thing that I guess in terms of this talk, and by the way, I've got really brief remarks. I've got two colleagues here who have done work in the area, have published in the area, that's going to present a little bit about what they've learned in terms of dealing with medication therapy. Okay, why don't you come up now? Hoyan, Ellen. But one thing about pharmacy in the healthcare world is really accessibility. And there's no question at all that if you need access to information on medication, if you need access at a community level, community pharmacies really represent, within most communities in America, easy access, accessibility, to where pharmacists in those settings can really provide the kind of support for patients, not only in terms of medication, but areas of prevention and other areas that really affect the nation's health. So the brief description is that the community resource, appropriate use of medications, coordinating medication use from multiple prescribers, and hopefully as IT advances and is more widely spread, that it's not going to be a problem in not knowing what other physicians may do with a patient that can adversely affect how, whether or not they respond to the drug or whether or not they're dealing with adverse effects because they're on these multiple medications. And right now, I don't think we have anything in place that provides that to the prescriber. But in many cases, especially if you're dealing with people covered by insurance, pharmacies really have access to the drugs prescribed from multiple physicians. That could be a source of being able to detect the problem and not wind up with a patient on two or three hypertensive agents. Mm-hmm. Information on over-the-counter medications, which I mentioned, is a really very important area. The studies that have been done that show that what people consider to be safe, natural, do have an impact in terms of affecting the way drugs behave. And again, pharmacists paying attention to that do make a difference. And then partnering with other health professionals to really inform patients and manage the very complex issue of prescription drug use. Okay, community pharmacies in the U.S. number about 61,000. 40,000 are chain pharmacies. That number could be going down if Walgreens does purchase Rite Aid, which has been a continuing evolution in the chain community in terms of acquisitions, buying, and winding up where if what was the model that every street corner in America would have four drugstores, that does get changed when one company takes over another because you don't need another store across the street. But still, it's accessible, and looking at the state of Illinois, there's 2,100 pharmacies. The vast majority are chains. Okay, so basically, management of drug in people is a critical part of making sure that the public stays healthy, providing access to drugs, providing information on how drugs are best to be used, providing the support for people on multiple drugs where they really need to understand how to take them, when to take them, and the fact that if you take a drug when you don't have any apparent symptom, it doesn't mean you can stop taking that drug. So let me turn it over to the two helpers here, because they really have done work in the area and been able to see how using medication therapy management does improve patients' health. First, we'll have Hoi Hoan, which is, I don't know where I put ABC for your help. He's at West Coast University College of Pharmacy. He's one of the new schools in California. You'll have to talk a little bit about your background on that. And then after that, Ellen Lowe, who is a new faculty member at Touro College of Pharmacy. Let me just sort of add something to it. I've been dean at two colleges of pharmacy. And my world basically was pharmacy. I've been educated as a pharmaceutical scientist. I became interested in public health really when I stepped down as pharmacy dean at Georgia and got involved with an initiative on the campus to develop medical health profession research programs at the university, which did not have a medical school. What came out of that was the decision that the university would start a college of public health. And during that time, I really learned how pharmacy needs to be actively engaged in public health, and that being involved in public health really is, I think, a responsibility of pharmacists, and that the American Public Health Association and having a group here would be part of that. I wound up in New York because there was an opportunity to start a school in Harlem. And I'm sort of telling you this because, again, it was a way of saying how pharmacists should be involved in public health. That school had a focus when started in public health, in having pharmacists being well-educated in the area of public health to provide patient support and really a knowledge base that improves patient care by knowing what public health does in the background in public health courses. It was an area of Harlem, issues of health disparities in communities that needed that kind of support. An example would be that vaccination rates for influenza vaccine rates with pneumococcal vaccines are much lower. And there was a thought that having pharmacists actively engaged in promoting those things would really support the public's health. So there's a real connection between pharmacy and public health, and I think we'll see from the next two speakers about how that could be done. So, Boyan.
Good morning, everyone, and thank you, Dr. Spellman and all, for giving me a few minutes to share with you my work in MTM. A quick thing on disclosure, my full-time, my day job, I'm an associate professor at West Coast University. ABC for Your Health is a website I had to create when I went to the Master of Public Health program. Taking public health informatics course, we all have to build a website. So I built a website for ABC for Your Health. That's why I'm associated with that. But I'm here to share with you my work when I was previously at the University of Maryland, Baltimore, and Eastern Shore. When I was an MTM pharmacist in a clinic. I think one thing I want to start out with saying that I think all of you know that according to the Institute of Medicine, there are 1.5 million preventable adverse drug reactions every year. So that's 1.5 million preventable adverse drug reactions. And in a couple of that, we also have a problem with non-adherence that Dr. Feldman had mentioned earlier before. So what pharmacists try to do with providing MTM medication therapy management is you saw the definition also, there are different core elements. We sit down one-on-one with the patient to review his or her medication. And in the clinic that I practiced, Primary Care Coalition of Montgomery County in Maryland, when I was at faculty at University of Maryland on Eastern Shore, is we saw about 300 patients in 5 years, one day per week. So when we see the patient, we sit down, we review all the medications, and the number of medication we see per patient is 9 medications. On average, each person will walk into the clinic to have 9 medications, 5 chronic conditions, and then we identify, when we sit down and review all the medications for drug interaction, adverse drug reaction, substance therapeutic, we identify that each have an average of 3.8 medication-related problems. If I wonder what is medication-related problem, we define medication-related problem as being a subtherapeutic, untreated indication, non-adherent, adverse drug reaction, drug-drug interaction, overdosage, and so forth and so on. What we were able to find is, we'll be glad to share with you too. We published a result in the Journal of Healthcare for the Poor and Underserved, as well as Journal of American Pharmacists Association. Had the opportunity to present those data at a recent MTM conference in Texas Southern University, also for the MTM Learning Community Center. So it showed that the patients in my clinic, the top three problems they have are about 40% have subtherapeutic. That means the dose are not at the right dosage. And then the second highest problem we have is non-adherence. About 20% or 1 in 5 patients are not adherent despite getting free medication at a free clinic. That's what underserved clinic I was. And then the third problem is untreated medication. That means that they are not on an ACE inhibitor for renal protection, for example. They're not on an aspirin for cardiac protection. So when we intervene, we make those recommendations. Working as a professional legal physician, and we were able to publish those data. And what's more important, we translate the data into I'm sure all of you are aware of the ECHO model, the economic, clinical, and humanistic outcomes. So that's a clinical outcome for the pharmacist being involved with the interprofessional team was able to improve LDL, vaccination rate, A1C, blood pressure, and so forth and so on. But it, more importantly, I think too, when there's an economic outcome, on average, we based our study on a large integrated healthcare system in Minnesota to quantify the data that we identified earlier. How can we have an estimated cost avoidance for preventing a visit to the urgent care center, a visit to the emergency department. And it come out to be the cost of 5 year data that we collected ranging from $115,000 to $614,000 total as an estimated cost avoidance for the healthcare system. Because in the Montgomery County where we were, there were 6 hospitals. The patient who do not have access to care usually go to the hospital emergency department. So we were able to show that ED diversion, one of them we tried to show, and then the return on investment for potential cost avoidance or healthy measure cost savings about from 1 to 5 to 1 to 25 when a pharmacist is a part of the team. Again, due to time limitation, I'll share you with that. And I think if you're interested, I'd be glad to share you the article we published in Journal of Healthcare for the Poor and Underserved, as well as Journal of American Pharmacists Association. But I want to leave you with one thing that, we all know the ECHO model, economic, clinical, and humanistic outcome. And we translate that, a gentleman named Don Berwick, Center for Medicare and Medicaid Service, who really want to NPM is so that they can then have lower cost. So I think by having a pharmacist providing NPM on the healthcare team to improve patient health outcome, we're able to achieve the better health, better care, and lower cost. So, and my colleague will share with you more about the policy aspect. Okay. So thank you for the opportunity.
Okay, we'll have Dr. Ellen to speak at this time, and two or three minutes at the most, because we do have another group following, and I have to talk to you.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you for the opportunity. My name is Ellen Ho. I'm going to be faculty at York College of Pharmacy, and the work I'm going to be presenting is some studies that allow graduate students at University of Maryland, Baltimore, and that really focus on the policy perspective of NPM. And in the two papers, one published in Health Affairs and the other one published in Journal of Managed Care Pharmacy, we examined the whether the CMS policy, the NPM criteria, really achieved its goal to approve, to improve medication appropriate use. So we examined Medicare beneficiaries with diabetes, heart failure, and COPD. And we all know that current CMS policy states that to be eligible for NPM services, the beneficiary has to have 2 to 3 chronic diseases and 2 to 8 chronic medication use, and also to be having a spending of $38 for this year to 2015. And so, yeah, like the presenters mentioned before, it really targets the intention of the policy really to target the patients with multiple chronic diseases, multiple like high polypharmacy and high Medicare Part D spending. However, we examined the patients with diabetes and heart failure and COPD. We found that this policy really targeted the patients already have a high use of guideline recommended medications, and also better adherence compared to those patients who are not qualified for the NPM services under current medication CMS policy. And also we found that if CMS would lower their criteria, then it would actually save Medicare a couple thousand dollars per patient each year. So we're really looking forward to some policy change to really better achieve CMS goal to improve appropriate medication use.
I just want to comment on Dr. Tron, because the students in the audience of the other individuals, Dr. Tron mentioned the Institute for Healthcare Poor and Underserved, where he had published an article. So let me give you like a 1 minute history on the Institute for Healthcare Poor and Underserved. I was an employee at the Agency for Healthcare Policy and Research, which is now called ARC. But during that time, our agency funded the Institute of Healthcare Poor and Underserved, and it was located at Meharry Medical College. So you need to understand the big picture. As a former professor, I like to tell students and other people that. So the Institute for Healthcare Poor and Underserved was at Meharry Medical College, and Dr. David Thatcher was the president of Meharry Medical College at that time. And since that time, he later became Surgeon General. But one of the things interesting that you say that, because we had a relationship with Dr. Turner at Texas Southern University and Meharry Medical College. So you see how things all come about. We never know how, you know, you're talking about something that the older generation knows that we need to give you the history. So now you're the Institute of Healthcare Poor and Underserved magazine is at through Hopkins, Johns Hopkins University, which I'm proud to say that I have 2 degrees in Johns Hopkins. So, but I just wanted to give you the history so that you'll know when someone is talking about something, you understand the big picture. And little did you know that Dr. Turner and myself had a lot to do with that journal.
Okay. So we want to thank Hoy and Ellen for their part into this program.